When he pulled me through, there was no hall. Just an icy chill and the blessed stink of human air. My shoulder ached, a low, dull throbbing. It was dark. Rain fell, but I was dry. My clothes were dry, too. I was covered with the smoky fragrance of demon magic. I blinked. I was lying on something cold and hard, but something warm was against the side of my face. Someone holding me. Musk and burning cinnamon. The smell drenched me, eased the burning in my shoulder and the pounding of my heart, the heavy, smoky pain in my lungs. I felt like I'd been ripped apart and sewn back together the wrong way.
It hurts.
Breathe. Just keep breathing. It will pass, I promise.
Then the retching started.
Oh, shit.
He rolled me onto my side, still holding me up. And I emptied my stomach. The demon actually stroked my hair. If I tried to forget that he had just held a gun to my head, it was actually kind of comforting. I finished losing everything I'd ever thought of eating. Then everything settled down and I lay on the concrete, while the demon stroked my hair and held me. It took a little while before I felt ready to face the world, even the real human world, again. I had said I'd kiss the ground, but I wasn't so sure I'd want to do that now that it was covered in puke. My puke.
I suppose this is pretty disgusting.
I felt the demon's shrug.
I don't care.
Of course not. It's a human thing, you wouldn't care.
I like humans. Most demons do. Otherwise, we would not have bothered to make you our companions instead of apes.
He stroked my hair. A few strands had come loose and stuck to my cheeks and forehead.
Great. And here I thought we were something like nasty little lapdogs to you guys. So I guess I've got my marching orders, huh?
I suppose so.
He slowly rose to his feet, pulling me with him. He put my sword in my hands, wrapped my fingers around it, then held the scabbard there until I stopped swaying. It was my turn to shrug.
I should go home and pick up some more stuff if we're going to be chasing a demon down.
Certainly. It is the prince's will that I obey.
Hey, I didn't do it. Don't get mad at me. What did he do to my shoulder anyway?
When we get to your house, you should look. I hope you realize how lucky you are, Necromance.
I just survived a trip to hell. Believe me, I'm counting my blessings right now. Where are we?
33rd and Pole Street, an alley.
I looked around. He was right. It was a dingy little alley sheltered from the rain by an overhang. Three dumpsters crouched at the end, blocking access to the street. Brick walls, a graffiti tag, trash on the ground.
Lovely. You sure have a great flair for picking these places.
You'd prefer the middle of Main Street?
His eyes glowed in the darkness. I stepped sideways as soon as my legs seemed willing to carry me. His hands fell back down to his sides.
The prince.
Yeah, he's a real charmer, all right. Ah, my shoulder hurts like a bitch.
Let me move the dumpster, and we'll call a cab.
Jaff brushed past me, heading for the mouth of the alley.
Oh, now you'll call a cab, where before you had to drag me through the subway?
I chucked my blade free of its sheath, checked the metal. Still bright, still sharp.
It was necessary. Leaving hell is not the same as entering, especially for a human. I had to find an entrance you would survive, but falling back into mortality is not so hard.
He stopped, his back to me.
Not so very hard at all.
I'd been in hell all afternoon, and suddenly an insane giggle bubbled up inside me. Why did I always want to laugh at times like this? All my life, the insane urge to giggle had popped up at the worst times.
Okay, great.
I shoved the blade back home.
Let's go.
He pushed one of the dumpsters aside as easily as I might have moved a footstool. I concentrated on putting one foot in front of the other without keeling over. Neon ran over the wet street. 33rd and Pole was right in the middle of the tank district. I wondered if it was a demon joke. But then, there was likely to be a lot of sex and psychoactives floating in the air here. It was probably easier to open a door between here and hell around that kind of energy charge. The demon occasionally fell back to take my elbow and steer me around a corner. He seemed content to just walk silently, and I hurt too much to engage in small talk. I'd ditch him soon enough. He hailed a cab at the corner of 30th and Vine. I fell into the seat gratefully. The driver, a bespectacled, mournful Polish man, jangled the antique rosary hanging from his fare deck when he saw my tattooed cheek. From then on, he addressed all his replies to Jaff. Story of my life. Guy didn't mind the demon, but would have thrown me out of the cab if he could.
Go ahead and make yourself at home. There's beer in the fridge, and wine if you like that. I've got to take a shower.
I should speak of Vardemol, to familiarize you with...
Later!
My shoulder twinged.
Hey!
He turned back to me. I lifted the sword a little, pointing at my left shoulder with the hilt.
What did he do to me?
The Prince of Hell has granted you a familiar necromance.
Jeffremel clasped his hands behind his back. He looked a little like a priest in his long black high-collared coat. I wondered where he hid the guns. I'd never heard of a demon with guns before. I should have studied harder, I suppose. But how the hell was I supposed to know that a demon would show up at my front door? I'm a bloody necromance, not a magi.
Oh no. I'm not a magi. I don't want-
Too late. Go take your shower. I'll keep watch.
Keep watch? Nobody knows I'm working for-
Your entry into hell may have been remarked. I'll make coffee.
I shook my head and brushed past him, heading for the stairs.
Gods above and below, what did I do to deserve this?
You have a reputation for being honorable, and your talents as a necromance are well known.
I waved a hand over my shoulder at him.
Fine. Just try not to set anything on fire, okay? Be careful with my house.
As my mistress wishes.
It would have been hard for him to sound more ironic. I climbed the stairs, my legs aching. Even my teeth hurt. An hour into this job and I'm already wishing I was on vacation. I had to laugh, trailing my fingers along the painted wall. My sword seemed far heavier than it should be. Halfway up the stairs, under the altar niche, was a stash of 3 water bottles, and I snagged one. I fumbled in my bag for a salt tablet, took it. Dried sweat salt crackled on my skin. I probably smelled like I'd been stuck in an oven. It was a miracle I hadn't been hit with heat stroke. I drained the water bottle, dropped my sword on my bed, put my bag inside the bathroom door and started stripping down. I paused halfway to turn the shower on and examined my left shoulder in the mirror. Pressed into the skin was a sigil I'd never seen before. Not one of the 9 canons I knew. I was no demonologist, so I didn't know what it meant exactly. But when I touched it, the glyph shifting uneasily, ropey scar like a burn twisting under my fingertips. I had to close my eyes against a wave of heat. Suddenly I saw my kitchen as if through a sheet of wavering glass. The familiar objects twisted and shimmering with unearthly light. He was looking at my stove. I found myself on my knees.
I've read about seeing through a familiar's eyes. Breathe, Danny. Breathe. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Been doing it all your life. Just breathe.
The tiled floor bit into my knees. My forehead rested against the edge of my bathtub. Steam filled the air.
Gods. So that's what they're talking about when they say... Oh, man. heavy shit, dude. I can't take the scene. I gotta go.
I'd just been given a demon familiar. Magi everywhere would be salivating. It was the high pursuit of every Magi to achieve a working relationship with one of the denizens of Hell. I'd never done much in that arena. I had more than enough work to keep me busy inside my own specialty. But occult practitioners are a curious bunch. Some of us like to fiddle around with everything when time permits. And a lot of the standard Magi training techniques were shared with other occult disciplines. Shamans, journeymen, witches, ceremonials, skinlin, and necromancers. After all, Magi had been the ones pursuing occult disciplines since before the Awakening and the Parapsychic Act. So I'd been given something most Magi worked for years to achieve. And I didn't want it. It only complicated an already fucked up situation. The steam shifted, blowing this way and that. I looked up to see the water running in the shower. I was wasting hot water. That got me moving. I stripped off the rest of my clothes with trembling fingers and stepped into the shower. I loosed my hair. I've been dyeing my hair black for years to fit in with necromance codes. But sometimes I wondered if I should streak it with some purple or something. Or cut the damn mess off. When I was young and in the hall, every girl's hair was trimmed boy short except for the sex witches. I suppose growing it out when I reached the academy was another way of proving I was no longer required to follow any rules other than the professional ones. Purple streaks would look nice on me. I'd been mousy blonde at the hall. Dyeing your hair to fit in with the antiquated dress codes rubbed me the wrong way. But part of being an accredited necromancer was presenting a united front to the world. We were all supposed to look similar, to be instantly recognizable, dark-haired and pale with emeralds on our cheeks and accreditation tats if possible, carrying our swords like shamans carried their staves. I thought perhaps once I'd retired, I'd let it grow out blonde. Then the shock of unreality hit me again.
Ugh.
I slumped against the tiled wall. I traced a glyph for strength on the tiles with a trembling finger. It flushed red for a moment. I was dangerously close to shock. And if I went into shock, what would the demon do?
Shit!
I finished up and got out, dried off, and padded into my bedroom, carrying my bag. I was dressed in a few minutes, moving automatically, sticking my feet back into my favorite pair of boots. The mark on my shoulder wasn't hurting now. It just ached a little. A flare of power staining through my shielding and marking me like a demon to sight. Black diamond spangles whirled through the trademark glitters of a necromancer's aura, and I could see the mark on my shoulder. A spot of pulsing darkness.
Great. This will make work so much easier.
I needed food. My stomach was rumbling, probably because I'd puked everything out in a backstreet alley. I scooped up my sword, then paced over to my file cabinet, passing my hand over the locked drawer. The locks, both electronic and magical, opened, and I dug until I found what I needed. I didn't give myself any time to think about it. The red file. I held it in a trembling hand for a moment, and then slammed the drawer shut. Scooped up my bag from the bed and stood for a moment, my knees shaking slightly, my head down, feeling like a racehorse run too hard. I stamped down the stairs, pausing halfway to touch the Anubis statue set in the little shrine tucked in the niche. I'd need to light a candle to him if I survived this. I found the demon in my kitchen, contemplating my coffee maker with a look of abstract horror. It was the closest to a human expression he seemed capable of, with his straight, saturnine face.
What?
You drink freeze-dried?
You sound like you just found out I've been sacrificing babies to Yahweh. I'm not exactly rich, Mr. Creepy. Why don't you just materialize some cone of fresh ground if you're such a snob?
Would you like me to, mistress?
He was still wearing the long black coat. I took a closer look at him. Long nose, winged cheekbones, strong chin. He wasn't spectacular like Lucifer, or horrific like the thing in the hall. I shivered reflexively. He looked normal, and that was even more terrifying once you really thought about it.
Just call me Danny.
I stamped over to the freezer, pulling it open. I yanked the canister out.
Here's the real coffee. I only get this out for friends, so be grateful.
You would call me a friend?
This was a lot less like talking to a robot. I was grateful for that.
Not really. But I do appreciate you holding me up out of my own puke. I understand you're just doing what Lucifer tells you, and something tells me you don't like me much, so we'll have to come to some kind of agreement.
I tossed the canister at him, and he plucked it out of the air with one swift movement.
You're pretty good. I'd hate to have to spar with you.
He inclined his head slightly, his ink-black hair falling back from his forehead.
My thanks for the compliment. I'll make coffee.
Good. I'm gonna go think about this.
I turned my back on him. He looked like a piece of Baroque furniture in my sleek, high-tech kitchen. I almost wanted to wait to see if he could figure out the coffee maker, but I wasn't that curious. Besides, demons have been fooling around with technology for hundreds of years. They're good at it. Unfortunately for humans, demons don't like sharing their technology, which is rumored to be spotless and perfect. It occurred to me now that the demons were probably doing now what the Nichtwren had done before the Parapsychic Act, using proxies to control certain biotech or straight tech corporations. Cloned blood had been a Nichtwren-funded advance. Lots of immortal bloodsuckers had grown very rich by being the stockholders and silent partners in several businesses. I guess when you're faced with eternity, you kind of have to start playing with money to assure yourself a safe nest. I carried the file into the living room and collapsed on the couch. My entire body shook. Waves of tremors from my crown to my soles. I balanced the file on my stomach, flung my arm over my eyes, and breathed out, my lips slackening. Training took over, brainwaves shifting. I dropped quickly into trance, finding the place inside myself that no gene map or scan would ever show, and was gone almost immediately. Blue crystal walls rose up around me. The hall was immense, stretching up to dark, starry infinity, plunging down below into the abyss. I walked over the bridge. My feet were bare. I felt grit on the stone surface, the chill of wet rock, the press of my long hair against my neck. Here, I always wore the white robe of the gods chosen, belted with silver, the mark on my cheek burning. The emerald flamed, a cocoon of brightness, kept me from being knocked off the bridge and into endless wells of the dark. The living did not come here, except for those like me. Necromancers. On the other side of the bridge, the dog waited, sleek and black. His high-pointed ears focused forward, sitting back on his haunches. I touched my heart, and then my forehead with my right hand. A salute.
Anubis.
My lips shaped the other sound that was the god's personal name. That which could not be spoken, resonating through me. I am the bell, but God puts his hand upon me and makes me sing. The warmth of his comfort descended on me. Here, in this refuge, I was safe even from Lucifer. Demons did not tread in death. At least I'd never seen one here. Sometimes, especially after a long stint of working one apparition after another, I wanted to stay. Almost needed to stay. No other necromance could enter my hall. Even those that could speak to Anubis as their psychopomp. Here, I was blessedly alone, except for the dead and the god. The cipher of the god's presence in the form of a dog pressed closer. I stroked his head. Silently, I felt him take the crushing weight of the problem and consider it. Blue crystal walls and floors sang a tone that washed through me, pushing away fear and pain as they always did. The souls of the dead rushed past, crystal draperies fluttering and sliding past the edge into the well of souls, impelled down the great expanse of the ballroom of infinity. I curled my fingers in the dog's fur and felt a jolt of warmth slide up my arm. My left shoulder twinged. The dog looked up, sleek black head inquiring, then nodded gravely. I found myself smiling. It was all absurd. The demon's mark did not rob me of my ability to walk in death. I was under the protection of my patron, the Lord of the Dead. What did I have to fear?
Nothing.
I sat straight up, bright metal peeking out between hilt and scabbard. The demon looked down at me, his green eyes subdued now. The file started to slide off my stomach. I grabbed for the red file, propping the sword to the side, using the floor to brace the end of the scabbard so I could slide the metal back in. It took me a few moments to get situated, but Jaff waited patiently, then handed me a cup of steaming coffee.
Were you dreaming? Or journeying?
Neither.
The contact with the psychopomp is private. Other necromancers don't talk or write about it easily, and never to strangers or other size. I would most definitely not tell this demon about it. I accepted the coffee cup.
Good and strong.
He'd even added a little bit of creamer, which is how I like my coffee.
Thanks.
He shrugged, folded his hands around the mug he'd chosen. It was the blue one, an interesting choice. Most people chose the white one. A few chose the red geometric Tandurf mug. Only one other person I'd allowed in my house had chosen the blue Bausto mug. Maybe the gods were trying to tell me something. I scrubbed at my eyes, reached over and hooked up the phone. I'm one of the few people left without a vid shell. I don't want anyone seeing my face unless it's in person. Call me a Lutter, but I distrusted vid shells. And in the privacy of my home, if I wanted to answer the phone naked, it was nobody's business but mine. I keyed in the number.
Thank you for calling Checkers. Pickup or delivery? Please punch in your order. One moment. Your delivery will be at your door in
20
minutes. Thank you for choosing Checkers.
Pizza's on its way. You can eat human food, right?
I can. You're hungry?
Yes. Oh,
the coffee burned my tongue. I made a face, settled the file in my lap. The tapestry hung on my west wall fluttered uneasily, Horace's eyes shifting back and forth.
I lost lunch and breakfast back in that alley, and I need food or I start talking to dead people, without meaning to. Anyway, I hope you like pepperoni. Make yourself at home while I look at this.
Jaff backed away without looking, dropped down in a chair next to a stack of necromance textbooks holding up a potted euphorbia. Then he just sat, his eyes narrowed, holding the coffee under his nose but not drinking it, watching me. I opened the file. Seconds ticked by. I really didn't have the courage to look down yet. I finally looked down at the file. There was the grainy police laser print that made my stomach flip-flop. Santino getting out of a car, his long, icy pale hair pulled back and exposing his pointed ears. The vertical black teardrops over his eyes, holes of darkness. I shut my eyes.
Get down, Tori! Get down!
Game over.
I shook memory away. Last seen in Santiago City, Hegemony, it said, and gave a date 5 years back. The day Doreen died. He could be anywhere in the world by now. He had been using the name Modius Santino, rich and elusive owner of Andro Biomed. We'd thought he was cosmetically modified. The rich got altered to look like whatever they wanted nowadays. After the murder investigation, we found out Andro Biomed was a front for another corporation. But the paper trail stopped cold, since the parent corporation had filed Andro under the mob corporate laws, effectively rendering itself anonymous. I hated the mob like I hated Chill. It wouldn't have hurt any of them to tell us where Santino had gone. It wasn't like we were trying to bring down the mob as a whole. We'd squeezed every mob connection in town, and made ourselves a few enemies, and finally had to admit defeat. The ancient law of Omerta still reigned, even in this technological age. Santino had vanished. More pictures. Pictures of victims. The first one was the worst because the first one was Doreen, lying under the photographer's glare, her legs twisted obscenely aside, her slashed throat, an awful, gaping smile, her chest cracked open, her abdominal cavity exposed, her right thigh skinned all the way down to the bone in a chunk of the femur, excised by a portable lace cutter. Her eyes were closed. Her face was peaceful, but it was still... I looked up at the ceiling. Tears pricked behind my eyes.
Someday someone's gonna find out what a soft touch you are, Danny.
I hadn't thought of Rena in a while. No more than I would think of any other deep, awful ache. Someone had once accused me of being unfeeling. It wasn't true. I felt it all the way down to the bone. I just didn't see any need to advertise it. I was halfway to my feet before Jaff reached the hallway. I sank back down on the couch. I could already smell cheese and cooked crust. Yum. A hot stillness took over the house. No pizza. Then I realized. The demon was checking my house shields. It was faintly rude. He didn't trust me to have my own house guarded. But then I set my jaw and turned Doreen's picture over. Santino hadn't had time to do his usual workup on Doreen. But there were other pictures, familiar from the case. He had taken different things from each. Blood, different organs, but always the femur, or a piece of it. As serial killers went, he was weird only in that he took more numerous trophies than others. That had been back when the police could afford my services. I still did a turn every now and again, mostly on cases Gabe was working. I owed Gabe. More important, she was my friend.
He was a demon. Well, it all makes sense now. Why didn't he taste like a demon? I wasn't that inexperienced. And why hasn't Lucifer tracked him down before now?
I looked up. Jaff stood at the entrance to the living room. My tapestry was shifting madly now, woven strands moving in and out. Horus shimmering, Anubis calm and still, Isis's arms beckoning.
Why hasn't Lucifer tracked him down before now? 50 years is a long time.
Not for us. It might as well have been yesterday.
Because only humans were being carved up, right?
He shrugged. The coat moved on him like a second skin.
We don't watch every serial killer and criminal in your world. We have other ways to spend our time. Our business is with those who want to evolve.
Get some plates for the pizza, please.
I looked back down at the file. A teenage girl's eviscerated body peered up at me. Her mouth was open, a rictus of terror. They'd called him the Saint City Slasher in the Holovids, lingering over each gory detail, theorizing why he took the femurs, plaguing the cops for information. I reached for the phone again.
Hello, Eddie. Is Gabe there?
I took that to mean yes.
This had better be good.
You got some time for me tonight, Spook?
Danny? What's up?
I've got a lead. On the slasher case. Midnight? My place?
You know I don't have time for a wild goose chase, Danny.
This isn't a wild goose chase.
My jaw ached. I was almost grinding my teeth.
You have new evidence?
Of a sort. Nothing that will stand up in court.
Doesn't follow the rules of paranormal evidence.
Come on, Gabe. Don't ride my ass.
The demon paced into the room, carrying the pizza box and two plates. I nodded at him. He stopped dead, watching me.
Fine. Come over at midnight. You alone?
No.
I owed her the truth.
I've got company.
Living or dead?
Neither.
All right, keep your little secret. Jesus. Fine, come over around midnight. Bring your new thing. We'll take a look at it now. Leave me alone.
See you soon, Spokerelli.
Fuck you, Dante.
I looked across at the tapestry. Horus shifted. Isis's arm raised, palm out. The great goddess held the Ankh to her chest, protectively. I saw Anubis's head make a swift downward movement, as if catching prey. Well, the gods were with me, at least.
We've got an appointment in 2 hours with a friend of mine. Let's go over the file together beforehand so we're prepared.
Never mind that I'm going to ditch your immortal ass as soon as possible.
Bring the pizza over. Share some space.
I patted the couch. He paused for just the briefest moment before pacing across the room, settling next to me on the couch. I laid the file aside and flipped the pizza box open. Half pepperoni, half vegetarian. I took a slice of either, plopped it on my plate.
Help yourself, Jaff.
He took a single slice of pepperoni, looked at me.
Haven't you ever had pizza before?
He shook his head, dark hair sleek and slicked back. His face was blank, like a robotic mask. A muscle twitched in his smooth cheek. Had I somehow violated some complicated demon etiquette? I folded the vegetarian slice in half, set the open pizza box on the floor, and took a huge bite. Melted cheese, crust, garlic sauce, and chunks of what used to be vegetable matter. The demon took a bite. He chewed, meditatively, swallowed, then took another bite. I tore into another chunk, licked my fingers clean.
Hot grease and cheese.
The food made me a little more solid, gave me some ballast. I had three slices in me before I started to slow down and really taste it. I alternated between chunks of pizza and long gulps of less scorching coffee. The demon caught on and copied me. Between us, we polished off the whole gigantic pizza. He ate 3/4 of it.
You must have been hungry. Damn, that was good.
He shrugged.
Unhealthy. But yes, very good.
His green eyes shone.
How long has it been for you? I mean, you don't seem like you get out much, you know?
Mortal years don't mean that much.
That effectively stopped the conversation. I squashed a flare of irritation. Served me right for getting personal with a demon.
Okay, fine. How about you tell me why Santino doesn't smell like a demon?
He does. Just not the kind that's allowed out of hell. Santino's a scavenger and a plague, one of the lower flight of hell. But he served the prince well and was rewarded for it. That reward allowed him to eventually escape the prince's strictures and come to this world with the egg.
I might as well ask him now. I might not get a chance to later.
So, what's in the egg?
The prince told you it's none of your concern.
Jaff stared blankly at the pizza box.
Is there more?
What, 3/4 of a gigantor pie isn't enough for you? Why would breaking the egg be bad?
I've rarely had human food.
The demon hunched his shoulders, sinking into the couch.
Vardamol must not be allowed to break the egg. The repercussions would be exceedingly unpleasant.
Like what? Hellfire? Brimstone? Plagues? What?
Perhaps. Or annihilation for your kind. We like humans. We want them to live. At least, most of us do. Some of us aren't so sure.
Great.
I towed the empty pizza box.
So, what side are you on?
I don't take sides. The prince points and says that he wants a death. I kill. No philosophy for me.
So you're on the prince's side.
I wiggled my toes inside my boots, then rocked up to my feet.
Yeah. You're hungry, huh? That wasn't enough?
No.
I scooped up the pizza box and my empty coffee cup.
Okay, let me see what else I've got. What else do you know about Santino?
He spread his hands, indicating helplessness.
I can give you his name, written in our language. Other than that, not much.
Then what good are you?
Frustration gave my voice an unaccustomed sharp edge. It's usually better to speak softly while in necromance. Some of us tend to affect a whispery tone after a while.
Look, you show up at my door, threaten me, beat up 6 street punks, drag me through hell, and finish off the job by eating most of the pizza. The least you can do is give me a little help tracking down this demon who isn't.
I can give you his name and can track him within a certain distance. Besides, I am to keep you alive. You might find me useful, after all.
Lucifer said you had a personal stake in this.
I balanced the pizza box in one hand.
Well?
He said nothing. His eyelids dropped a millimeter or so over burning green eyes. Lucifer's eyes were lighter. Lighter, but more awful.
You aren't going to tell me anything. You're just going to try to manipulate me from place to place without telling me anything.
His face might have been carved out of some golden stone and burnished to a matte perfection. It was like having a statue of a priest sitting on my couch.
That's the last time I try to be nice to a demon.
I turned on my heel and stalked away, carrying the empty pizza box.
Fucking demons. Ripped me away from a nice afternoon spent doing divination and watching the soaps. Now I've got a demon to catch and another goddamn demon sitting on my couch and Doreen...
I folded the pizza box in half, barely noticing. Then I jammed it in the disposer and closed the lid.
Fucking demons push you from square to square, never tell you a goddamn thing. You can take this job and shove it up your infernal...
Danny.
There was a touch like a breath of cool crystal against my cheek. I whirled. The world spun and wavered like a candle flame. I looked down at my hand on the counter. Red molecule drip polish on my nails glimmering under the full spectrum lights. Necromancers can't handle high-end fluorescence on a daily basis. I could have sworn I heard Doreen's voice. Felt her usual touch on my cheek, her fingernails brushing down toward my jaw.
My house is shielded to a fare-thee-well. It would take the psychic equivalent of a thermonuclear explosion to get inside. But a demon could do it.
I blinked.
My sword.
My sword was in the other room. The living room. I'd left my blade with a demon. I sprinted down the hall and skidded on the hardwood, turning the sharp corner and bolting into the living room. My sword was where I'd left it, leaning against the couch. The demon sat still with his hands upturned on his knees, his eyes half closed, a sheet of white paper in one golden hand. I scooped my sword up and turned on the balls of my feet. Green sparks flashed. My rings were active again, spitting in the charged air. I dropped below conscious thought and scanned.
Nothing.
Nothing there.
I heard it. I know I heard Doreen's voice. I know I did.
I'd heard her voice. My sword rang, very softly in the silence. The metal was blessed and rune-spelled. I'd spent months pouring power into it, shaping it into a psychic weapon as much as a physical one. Sleeping with it, carrying it everywhere until it was like an extension of my arm. Now it spoke, a song of bloodlust and fear filling the steel, pushing outward in ripples to touch the defenses on my house, making them shiver slightly. My left shoulder twinged sharply. I glared at the demon who still hadn't moved.
Are you expecting a battle?
A single drop of sweat rolled down my spine, soaked into the waistband of my jeans. I tried to look everywhere at once.
I heard it. I know I did.
I sheathed my sword, backed up toward my altar, scooped up my bag and slid it over my head. I needed my knives.
I'm going upstairs. Someone's playing games with me and I don't like it. I hate being played with.
I'm not playing.
You wouldn't tell me if you were.
I backed out of the room.
Looks like I'll be ditching him right about now. Christ, I'm gonna have to leave a demon in my house. This really sucks.
I made it up the stairs and had my knives on in less than 20 seconds. Then, carrying my sword, I padded to my bedroom window. The chestnut tree that shaded my window had a convenient branch I could drop from. I had one foot out when...
Going somewhere.
Jaff's hand closed around the back of my neck. His fingers were hard and too hot to be human. I wanted to walk to Gabe's, and the demon had no preference either way. So we walked. The rain had stopped and the pavement gleamed wet. At least it wasn't Dark Moon. That would have been bad all the way around. I get cranky around Dark Moon. even with the Espo patch to interrupt my menstrual cycle and keep me from bleeding while I'm on a bounty or just can't be bothered. I stole glances at the demon as we walked down Trivisadero Street. Gabe's house was in a bad part of town, but she still had the high stone walls that her great-great-something-or-other had put up. The real defenses were Gabe's shields and Eddie's rage. Not even a chill junkie would intrude on a house held by a Skinlan and a necromance. Skinlan were mostly concerned with growing things, the modern equivalent of kitchen witches. Most of them worked for biotech firms, getting plants to give up cures for ever-mutating diseases and splicing together plant DNA with magic or complicated procedures. Skinlan are as rare as Setayim, but not as rare as necromances. Most scions are shamans. Another hot debate between the ceremonials and magi and genetic scientists. Why were necromances and Setayim so rare? The only real drawback to Skinlan is that they are berserkers in a fight. A dirt witch in a rage is like a chill freak. They don't stop even when wounded. And Eddie was fast and mean, even for a dirt witch. The demon said nothing, just paced alongside me with even, unhurried strides. It was uncomfortably like walking next to a big, wild animal. Not that I'd ever seen a big, wild animal, but still. I lasted until the corner of Trivisadero and 15th.
Look, don't hold it against me. You can't blame me for being cautious. You're just here to yank my chain and take this egg thing back to Lucifer, leaving me in the dust and probably facing down Santino alone to boot. Why shouldn't I be careful?
He said nothing. Laser-bright eyes glittered under straight eyebrows. His golden cheeks were hairless and perfect. Demons didn't need to shave. Or did they? Nobody knew. It wasn't the sort of question you asked them.
Hello? Anyone in there?
He still said nothing. I sighed and looked down at my feet. We had to wait for the light here. Trivisadero was a major artery for street-side hover and pedicab traffic.
All right. I'm sorry. There, you happy?
You chatter too much.
Fuck you too.
The light changed and I didn't look, just stepped off the curb, already planning how to ditch him after Gabe's house. My left shoulder gave one hot flare of agony. His hand closed around my arm and jerked me back as a warm rash of air blasted up the street. The telltale whine of hover cells crested, and a sleek silver passenger hover jetted past, going well over the speed limit. A sonic wash of anti-police shielding making me cringe.
I should have sensed that.
I stared after the car. Sooner or later, a cop cruiser would lock onto it and the driver would end up with a ticket. But right now, my skin tingled and roughened with goose flesh. The demon's fingers unloosed from my arm, one by one. I wasn't focusing on my surroundings. I was too busy grousing to myself over being stuck with a demon. It was unprofessional of me. But more important, it could get me killed. I couldn't afford to lose my focus. I closed my eyes.
You will pay attention from now on, okay, Danny? It's no skin off the demon's nose if you fucking well get yourself run over by a frat boy in Daddy's hover. I should say thanks. No! If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be standing here. I'd be at home, nice and warm and dry, and going on with my life.
I opened my eyes and took a slightly calmer look at the world.
Thanks. I know you're just doing what you're told, but thanks. I won't pull a stupid stunt like that again.
He blinked. That was all the response I got from him. I checked the street and was about to step out cautiously when he caught my arm again.
Do you hate demons?
The don't walk sign began to flash. I jerked free of his hand and he let me.
If what you tell me is true, it was one of yours that killed my best friend. She was Setayim. She never hurt anyone in her life. But Santino killed her all the same.
He stared across the street as if he found the traffic signals incredibly interesting.
But no, I don't hate demons. I just hate being jacked around, that's all. You could have simply asked me nicely instead of sticking a gun in my face, you know.
I will remember that. Santino killed your friend, then.
He didn't just kill her. He terrorized her for months and nearly killed me, too.
There was a long silence.
Then I will make him pay for that. Come, It's safer now.
I checked again and followed him across the street. When we reached the other side, he dropped back to walk beside me, head down, hands behind his back while he paced. My thumb caressed the guard on my sword, wanting to pop the blade free.
If they're right, and I can kill Santino, this is the blade that will do it. Wait until Gabe sees this.
I found myself smiling. A hard, delighted smile that would not reach my eyes.
This is the place.
I laid my hand against the gate, let the shields vibrate through me. Gabe's work recognized me and the gate lock clicked open. I pushed before it could swing closed, slipped through. The demon stepped through almost on my heels, and Gabe's shielding flushed red, swirled uneasily. I bit down on the inside of my cheek and waited. Gabe's shield settled, turned a deep blue-violet. She'd read what was with me, and wasn't amused.
Come on.
The demon followed me up the long, paved drive.
Keep your mouth shut, okay? This is important.
As you like.
Just when I was starting to think I might like him, too.
I walked up to the house. The grounds were ragged, but still evidently a garden. Eddie kept the hedges down and the plots weeded. I went up to the steps to the red-painted door. Gabe's house had layers and layers of shielding. Her family had been necromancers and cops for a long time, since before the Parapsychic Act was signed into law, giving Sai's protected status, and also granting citizenship for several other non-human races. Gabe's trust fund was humongous and well-managed. She didn't even have to work as a necromancer, let alone as a cop. She had this thing about community service, passed down from her mother's side of the family. I admired that sense of responsibility in her. It made up for her being a rich brat. I felt a flare of power right inside the door. From the door, Eddie glowered at me. I smiled, keeping my teeth behind closed lips. The demon, fortunately, said nothing. But a slow tensing of his diamond-flaming aura warned me. The same aura lay over mine, tensing as if to shield me, too. The shaggy blonde Skinlin stood there for a long 10 seconds or so, measuring us both. His shoulders hulked, straining at his t-shirt, and the smell of wet earth and tree branches made the air heavy around him. I kept my hands very still. If he jumped for me, he wouldn't stop until one or both of us was bleeding. Gabe resolved out of the shadows behind Eddie, her sword out, soft light sliding on the blade's surface.
You didn't tell me you were bringing a demon.
Gabrielle Spocarelli was small and slender, 5'2" of muscle and grace. Her necromance tat glittered on her cheek, the emerald spitting and twinkling a greeting that my own cheek burned, answering. She wore a scoop-necked silk sweater and a pair of torn jeans and looked casually elegant in a way I had always secretly envied. I always wondered what she saw in a dirty, misanthropic hedge wizard, but Eddie seemed to treat her well and was almost fanatically protective of her. Gabe needed it. She got into a lot of trouble for a homicide detective. Almost as much trouble as I did. Almost.
I'm kind of surprised by that myself. Truce?
I reached up slowly and pulled cloth away from my shoulder, exposing about half of the red scarred brand that was the mark of a demon familiar.
I've got a story to tell you, Gabe.
Gabrielle considered me for a long moment, her eloquent dark eyes passing over the demon and back to the mark on my shoulder. Then her sword flickered back into its sheath.
Eddie, can you get us some tea? Come in, Danny. You've never pulled a Mickey on me before. I suppose you're not pulling one now.
You can't be serious.
Eddie's blonde eyebrows pulled together. Why did he never seem to shave? I let go of my shirt. I felt better with the mark covered up.
Oh, come on, Eddie. Live a little. Tea, please. And you, whoever you are, demon, if you bring trouble into my house, I'll send you back to hell post-haste. Got it?
I saw the demon nod out of the corner of my eye. He said nothing.
Good for him.
Inside Gabe's house, the scented dark pulled close. She'd been burning Kiffy. I closed my eyes for a moment and filled my lungs. She wasn't the most powerful necromancer around, but she had a quality of precision and serenity most necromancers lacked. Necromancers don't often like hanging out with each other. We tend to be a neurotic bunch of prima donnas, in fact. To find someone I actually liked who understood what it was like to see the dead, that was exceptional. She led us into the kitchen where Eddie had the kettle on. He had my regular cup out, too. The long, sinuous black mug reserved for me. I turned to Jeff.
Tea?
He spread his hands helplessly.
He'll have tea. I've told him not to open his mouth. It'll get us all in trouble.
Good thinking.
Gabe set her sword down on the counter. I prefer a katana-shaped blade, but Gabe went for a two-handed longsword that seemed far too big for her slim hands. And believe me when I say I never want to face her across that edged metal.
So you said about that case.
I dug the file out of my bag and handed it to her.
The Prince of Hell wants me to track down this guy. His name's Vardimal. Our old buddy Santino.
The Prince of...
Her eyes fastened on Jeff.
Apparently this is the devil's errand boy.
I tried to strangle the mad giggle that rose up inside me. It didn't work.
I've had a really rough day, Gabe.
She flipped the file open, even though she knew what it contained. Her face turned paper white.
Gabrielle?
Gabrielle fumbled in her pocket, dug out a crumpled pack of jetons, and fished one out with trembling fingers. She produced a silver zijan and clicked the flame into life. The smell of burning synth hash mixed with the pungent spice of Kiffy.
Make some tea, Eddie! Goddamn!
I perched on a stool on the other side of the breakfast counter.
Yeah. God damn.
Gabe slapped the file closed, not even looking at the Demon's Edition. The single sheet of paper with silvery lines marking Vardimal Santino's name in the demon language.
You really think?
I do. Honestly.
She considered this, took another drag off her smoke. The emerald set in her cheek flashed, popped a spark out into the air. My rings answered with a slow, steady swirling. Eddie poured hot water into the cups.
Mint tea.
What do you need?
I need a paranormal hunt waiver on my bounty hunter's license.
That was fairly standard and carried no liability for her. All I'd have to do was have her sign off on the paperwork. Now came the big stuff.
I need 2 HDOC and Omni-license to carry, and I need a plug-in for the net.
If I was going to go after a demon, I needed all the police wear I could beg, borrow, or steal. The HDOC and plug-in would give me access to hegemony cop computers and the treaty access areas of Puchkin copnets. And the Omni-license would be nice to have if I needed a plas cannon or a few submachine guns to make sure the demons stayed down.
Christ. Then a partridge in a pear tree. Want her fucking left kidney too, Danny?
I ignored him, but the demon shifted his weight, standing right behind me. My left shoulder throbbed, a persistent, fiery ache.
I can get you the para waiver and 1 HDOC and maybe an Omni, but a plug-in... I don't know. This doesn't constitute new evidence.
What if I made a donation? This is important!
My rings spat and crackled.
Don't you think I know that? What the fuck, Danny?
I accepted my tea from Eddie, who slammed a pink-flowered ceramic mug down for the demon. My mouth quirked, turned down at the corners.
I'm sorry, I just... Doreen, you know?
I know.
Gabe flipped over another page.
I can't get a judge to sign a plug-in for you on the basis of this. But I can ask around, see what the boys can do on the unofficial side. Might even be able to get you some backup. What do you say?
I work alone. The only reason I let him tag along is because I've been forced into it. You should have seen it, Gabe. Oh, it was awful.
I have no desire to ever see that, Danny. Greco-Hades is enough for me.
I had never asked who her personal psychopomp was. Now I wondered. It wasn't a polite question. Each key to unlock death's door is different, coded into the deepest levels of breath and blood and consciousness that made up a necromance. It was like looking in someone's underwear drawer to the nth degree. I blew across the top of my tea to cool it. Gabe flipped grimly through the rest of the file. Her fingers shook a little. She tapped hot ash into a small blue ceramic bowl. Eddie hovered in the kitchen, running his blunt fingers back through his shaggy blonde brown hair, his eyes fixed on Gabrielle's drawn-back lips and tense shoulders.
Gods above and below, can that thing actually track Santino?
I half-turned on the stool. Jaff's eyes met mine. Had he been watching the back of my head? Why?
Can you track him?
He shrugged, spreading his hands again to indicate helplessness. I glared at him.
Once I'm close enough, I can track him. The problem will be finding the part of your world to look in.
I swiveled back to look at Gabe.
I need a plug-in to get information on who's in whatever town I go to. The night side will help me trace him, especially if he's up to his old tricks. Dakin can do me up a tracker, but if Santino's a fucking demon and notices me using magi magic, he might be able to counter. Hard.
Gabe chewed at her lower lip, considering this. She looked over at Eddie, finally, and the skinlin stilled. Motionless, barely even breathing, he stood in the middle of the clean blue-tiled kitchen, his blunt fingers hanging loosely at his sides. She finally looked up at me.
You'll get your plug-in. Give me 24 hours.
Good enough? I'm gonna visit Dakin and the spider, and I need to kit myself out.
Has Dake moved? You kidding? You know him. Can't stand to walk down the street alone. He's still in that hole out on Pole Street. You gotta get some sleep, Danny. I know how you are when you hunt.
I don't think I'll get much sleep for a while. Not until I rip his spleen out. Vardamol, Santino, whoever he is. Whatever he is.
If he was a demon, why didn't we know?
I tipped my head back, indicating Jaff.
He says Santino's a scavenger and they aren't allowed out of hell. This one escaped with something Lucifer wants back.
Great. One thing, Danny? Don't bring that thing here ever again.
I would have thought she'd be a little more understanding, knowing what it was like to be pointed and sneered at on the street. But then again, a demon was something different.
He's not a thing. He's a demon.
Jaframel gave me a sidelong look.
But don't worry, I won't.